Our next guest, man, we might have to share a suit story with him. Ray Farrar, a longtime NHLer, now analyst on TSN. Ray, how you doing?
I'm doing well. What suit story you got for me?
Well, I was going to ask you. Most guys always kind of joke about the, you know, the first suit or two that they had, where maybe a veteran had to say, "Hey, buddy, you might have to up your suit game a bit."
Now, you know what? My dad never wore a pair of jeans in his life.
Oh, nice.
So he wore either his work clothes, which were, you know, like the green work pants.
Yeah.
And then when he came home, he'd shower up and change, always dress pants, always a, you know, he was, I don't know, it was just like that era was, you know, you're always looked, you just were never in jeans, let me put it that way.
Yeah.
So I was 16, and I was going to go play junior, and so he took me to a store and bought me a suit. He's like, you have to look sharp. And so while I was never the most flashy guy, or, you know, I had it in me to, you always are supposed to look neat. And that came from Dad.
Okay,
but there
good.
Were a few guys who would spend lots of money and look like they put on a trash bag. And you'd be like, what did you just buy? And they're like, this looks great. And you're like, well, who told you that? There's nothing better than when a guy comes into a locker room and thinks he's got a good suit on. And he doesn't. And the guys just rip him to shreds. Because you never see that suit again. That's the best part.
Ray, what was the worst era for suits? I mean, you're of an age now. You passed through a few clothing trends. Was it the boxy shoulder thing, the shiny suits? What was a real affront to good taste during your career?
I would say the big shoulders, but also the monochromatic.
Oh, yes.
Remember when Regis Philbin had, like, black suit, black shirt, black tie, black pants? Or green suit, green shirt, green, you know, different shades of green.
Yeah.
Everybody went through this one stage where everybody was in one color. It was always a different color. You know, there's the guy with the brown suit. There's the guy with the green suit. There's the guy with the black suit. You know, like, and you had the big shoulders on top of it. That was, and the really wide ties, I would say. Actually, when I think about it, Robin, most of, you go through this stuff and you go, at the time, it looked awesome. My kids look at my pictures and are like, what the hell were you wearing?
Oh.
And you're like, man, that was style.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it was bad style.
Oh, popping the collars out over top of the that was great.
Oh, that was a good look, wasn't it?
It was awesome. Yeah. especially if you had good flow. If you had good hair, man, you could rock that. I never had that hair look, but, man, a few boys, like, they would look average, but with their hair flow and all of a sudden, the big collar over top of their suit, you're just like, man, like, that's totally slapshot. It was awesome.
I looked at, you know, but even, like, the girls' styles, right, the women's styles. Like, I'd look at some pictures of Cammy when she was going to college, and I'm like, how much hairspray did you have in that thing?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's like she had four heads of hair. And she's like, oh, that would, the more you had in, the more product, the better it was. I'm like, I guess.
Yeah.
And then I remember, I'm like, yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah, totally, because guys always thought it was hot, too, at that time, so that was the funny part
about
it. Oh,
yeah. Now you'd be like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Ray Ferraro joins us. Now, Ray, you had some interesting comments. Like, the Edmonton Oilers, I thought Matt Hendricks said it great after the game last night. He goes, when we play to our system and detail, we can be an okay team. But when we're not, we're very sloppy, and we've seen that too often than not this year, is what he said after the game last night, where they played quite well against Boston. But, you know, the game in Toronto was, you know, just another one of those dog breakfast games by the Edmonton Oilers. And give me your thoughts, I guess, on Justin Schultz since he's returned from injury.
Well, what I'm seeing, first of all, any player that comes back from injury, what I expect is lots of energy early, and then they're going to fade because they're not, you know, they've lost their conditioning a little bit. Like, once that initial euphoria getting back in the lineup wears off, you kind of go, oof, I'm tired. You know, like, wow, I got banged around last night, I'm tired. So you settle in for a bit, and then your play starts to climb again. What I see it with Schultz, and what I've always kind of seen with him, is, of course, excellent puck skill. He's a very good passer. He's got a good shot. But I've never seen, and I don't see, a lot of ice awareness when he's on the ice. I don't see a lot of stop in his zone and commit to breaking up a play. I'll give you a couple examples. The game in Toronto, now it was a bad example probably for everybody because the game was no good. But on the first goal against, that was Komarov's power play goal. He's standing in the corner next to Komarov. Komarov beat him out of the corner, and Schultz was at his back when Komarov tipped it into the open net. So he didn't keep him in the corner. He didn't stay on the defensive side. He wasn't aware enough to realize he was in a bad spot. On the second goal, which was the Kadri deflection, he was with Van Riemsdyk, and he played the cycle so softly that Van Riemsdyk just took the puck out of the corner and passed it to the point. Like, he didn't stop the cycle. It's in the net. So now that's two goals. In the second period, about midway through the period, this is the best example of not having awareness. And this is where I go, ooh, boy, he might never get it. There's a shift in the Oilers' zone. They're stuck for a little bit. Korpikoski loses his stick. So now they're really stuck, right? They've only got four guys with a stick. And Toronto's, you know, cycling around, and, you know, Korpikoski doesn't have a stick. He can't really help. The puck gets shot, misses the net. Schultz picks it up behind the net. He comes up the left side, and he passes it to Korpikoski. He doesn't have a stick.
Yeah.
Like, he hasn't had a stick for 30 seconds. Like, how do you not notice that? And so I'm not trying to pick on him. What I'm saying is that those that think that, oh, yeah, he can still grow to be an elite-level player, elite-level players don't pass it to a guy without a stick. So some guys have better on-ice awareness than others. So what you might be looking at is an overreach on Schultz from the Oilers. And, hey, when he was in college, he was a guy that everybody was stumbling over to sign. And one of his defense partners in Wisconsin was Jake Gardner. And the other defenseman on that Wisconsin blue line was Ryan McDonough. And a friend of my son's played on that Wisconsin team. And he told me when they were in school that Ryan McDonough was by far the best of the three. And it's kind of proving that out right now. Gardner and Schultz are like mirror images of each other to me. One's left-handed, one's right-handed. They both can skate. They both can pass the puck. I don't know what they see on the ice, and I don't know that either of them play with enough urgency to be a top-end defender. So that's kind of where I'm at on Schultz, and I'm kind of the same place with Jake Gardner.
Ray, you know, since the team went on that road trip and it ended so badly with that game in Toronto where they made, you know, Garrett Sparks look like a Vezina candidate, lots of talk about patience, uproar in the fan base. The media looks at the team and makes suggestions about maybe what should be done. Shirelli and McClellan come out and say, look, I know this doesn't play well in Edmonton because we're going on a decade where you've missed the playoffs, but we've only been here X number of days. We need to go about this properly. It's a tough course to stay, but they don't have much choice but to do things properly regardless of all the external noise, do they?
I think they have no choice, Robin. There's none. They can't. Whatever their plan was, when Peter Chiarelli was hired, he must have laid out a plan for Bob Nicholson and said, this is what I see. And when Todd McClellan was hired by Peter Chiarelli, he must have laid out a plan and said, this is what I see. And if they didn't, then the whole hiring process is, you know, is goofy. Mm-hmm. But I don't believe that. I believe that they went in just as I described. Here is my plan. This is what I think. This is where I'd like to get to. This is how I'd like to get there. For both Chiarelli to Nicholson and McClellan to Chiarelli. So the fact that the Oilers have stumbled around for a decade, unfortunately, is something that the fans have to chew on, that Chiarelli and McClellan can't. You can't go make a panic move to try and fix 10 years of ineptitude by making a move that you're not ready to make. And I'll give you an example of, like, a specific move that you hear talked about. So, like, Leon Draisaitl's been a revelation since he's come back from the American League. Like, I'm quite frankly surprised that he's done as well as he has done. I loved when they picked him at number three in the draft. I love them at the World Junior team, playing for a German team that was overmatched. His coach and general manager in Prince Albert had told me nothing but spectacular things about him as a kid, and a desire to work in his draft year. So I thought this was a great pick. I just thought it was going to take him a little longer. Now, he might go into the ditch here, right, because he's so young. That might happen. It very easily could happen. And that doesn't mean that you should be any less bullish on Draisaitl at all. But there's a position of almost duplication and strength, quite frankly, in Edmonton, and that's at center, with McDavid and Nugent Hopkins and Draisaitl. Now, let's assume Connor McDavid comes back in January, things are good, he gets back on the beam, and the fan base starts really pushing to trade Nugent Hopkins. So they trade Nugent Hopkins because that's a position of strength, and maybe they can fix a position of weakness, defense, from a position of strength. Then one of those two kids gets hurt. Then what? Your position of strength in a heartbeat becomes a position of weakness. Mm-hmm. Or Draisaitl all of a sudden becomes 20 and is in the desert and can't get out for the immediate future. Then what? You have no options. It's a really tough place to be where they are, given the fact that it's taken so long to accumulate these assets through, you know, just a meandering type of seasons year after year. So I guess what I'm saying is the only way out of this is to continue to draft and continue to put enough prospects in your system that you can make a move somewhere along the line to fix what are your weakest points. And who knows where the answer's coming from. I watched the goalie last year at the World Championships, and I thought that he was going to have a tough time because he was all over the place in goal for the Swedes, all over the place in the net.
Yeah.
And what is it, 11 of 14 or 10 of 13 starts he's made?
Yep.
He looks terrific. Now, I don't know if he's going to be terrific in 2 months, but, man, he looks terrific. Like, there was an unexpected answer that came, and maybe the Oilers have to wait and see exactly with their own eyes what they have, but it seems clear to me that the mix that they have is just not the right one, and it has to be changed.
Ray Ferraro from TSN. And Ray, that's probably the toughest part about it, because I'm not sure it's just a skill set. It just, you know, the team's just, there's no emotional leader on the team amongst the top six. I don't think your leaders, some of your leaders have to come from your top six, or, you know, definitely your top pair. And Darnell Nurse, I think, will emerge as that guy in the future. And, you know, Taylor Hall, I don't think anyone questions his ability to play hard every night. And, you know, and he might not be the, you know, a big vocal leader. He's not a really outward guy. That's just not who he is. And that's not a knock. I'm sure you played with lots of really good players who didn't, you know, weren't big rah-rah guys. But do you sense when you watch the orders, like, I just, like, last night, I couldn't believe it. They're playing Dennis Seidenberg gives Luke Gazdick a shot in front of the net, and Gazdick does nothing. And I know that they're don't take penalties against them, but you got to push him back. Like, it's Luke Gazdick. And if Luke Gazdick isn't pushing back, and I just, like, I wonder at times if the whole team, where they've just got a big group of guys that, you know, no one really ever wants to step outside the comfort zone. And trust me, Gazdick's tough as nails, and he does a job that I'd never do, and most people would never do. But do you see that when you watch the orders?
There are times I see a really tentative group, a bunch of players that are looking for the next guy to make the big play, that are unsure. They look like a team that hasn't won very much. And so the commonality year to year is that they've had their top end of the roster back. I mean, they've changed that bottom six over and over and over again. And unfortunately, the change has to be with guys that are more significant. Like, Letestu is a fine fourth line center. Hendricks is a fine fourth line winger. If that's your fourth line, man, you got your money in the bank, because those guys can kill penalties for you. Letestu plays on the power play a little bit. They're in really good shape. But did anyone think Anton Lander would have? Does he have any points? 1 point maybe.
Lander's like, got one. Think, yeah.
Yeah. Did anyone think that was going to happen? I didn't.
No.
I watched him at the Worlds. I'm like, man, this guy's ready for a full-time NHL spot. And he's just come out and been flat. So eventually, you know, they signed Korpikoski. He's not going to create any offense for you. He's really a fourth-line player. But if you have Hendricks playing on your fourth line and you've got Korpikoski playing, now you got this muddled collection of guys. Right? Like, it's tough to define roles for anybody when you haven't won enough that anybody's roles become clear.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm watching Jordan Eberle last night, and I watched him really close. And Al Arbor, you know, I'm roughly the same size as Jordan. Al Arbor used to have this phrase with me, and he'd pull me in, and he used to call me the Seagull. And he'd say, Seagull, you're on the end of your goddamn stick again. And what he meant by that is every puck that I went to, I would reach to get it instead of getting my nose over top of the puck. And when you're a little guy, your nose has to be over top of the puck. Because if it's not, you get bumped out of the way too easy. A big guy can play with reach. A little guy can't. A little guy's got to get right over top of it. And I don't know if Jordan's a little uneasy, or if he's not confident, or what it is, but I saw a lot of end of his stick. Now, I know he got burned on a ridiculous save last night, you know, the rebound that Rask made that great glove stop on, but he doesn't have the puck enough to make a difference like he should, like he can make. And to me, he's at the end of his stick.
Ray, where are you going next? What games you calling?
Where am I? I'm in Minneapolis now. I'm doing Toronto, Minnesota tonight. I go home tomorrow. Then I got Toronto, Jersey on Tuesday, and that's it for me. Then I flip into World Junior mode, which is hard to believe. Another year's come around, and with Canada naming their 30-man camp roster, starting to see some of the other countries putting together their final evaluation rosters. So we head over to Finland, Gord and I, on December 17th.
Nice. Quickly, one on the Toronto Maple Leafs. Bernier agrees to the two-week conditioning stint. What do you make of Jonathan?
Let me interrupt you. That might be misleading to say he agreed to it.
Okay.
I don't think he really had a choice.
No. Okay. Fair enough.
So go ahead.
But either way, like, a lot of time guys can not do it. But so what have you seen that's just disappeared in his game?
Well, it's easy to say his confidence has disappeared, but what does that really mean? When I look at him, it's like he hopes the puck hits him. You know, he looks small. He's not a big guy anyway, but there's times when Bernier's in the net and you look, he's out on top of his paint. He looks like he's in control of his position. What I see now is a guy that's small, he's nervous, he doesn't catch the puck, he kind of bangs it around before he covers it. Everything is an adventure for him. And so I had a goalie once describe this to me, said where they get into trouble is that they try to stop the second shot before they stop the first shot. You know, like, they're so worried about everything else, the only thing they got to worry about is the puck. Stop the puck that's coming at you first. And so Bernier is, I mean, he's 0-8-1. I think his save percentage is about 88.5. You know, Jonathan Bernier is not the best goalie in the league. He's sure not the worst. And this is, you know, so now Toronto sends him down. He's got 2 weeks. I think he's going to play 4 games in the 2 weekends. You know, get some pucks, get some work at practice, get out of the spotlight where every day he goes to practice, there's no cameras pointed at him. He can just go and practice and work with the goalie coach, and they hope that he comes back in 2 weeks as a different guy, you know, as a guy ready to start again. Because if they don't, I mean, I don't know what they do with him. He's got another year at $4.1 million, guys. You know, like, nobody's well, jumping up and down to make that trade.
That's buyout city, potentially.
I mean, what else would you do, Jason, right? Like, if the coach won't put him in the net, which is why he's in the American League, what do you do with him? You have to try and rehabilitate his game. And I think this is a good move. And hopefully for him, he goes down there and has a clear head and just works at it. I mean, don't you, whether you like a t- team or not, I find it hard to watch a guy struggle that badly. Like, I feel for these guys that are, their game has just left them.
Yeah.
And you're like, man, nobody wants to see anybody struggle like that. Like, the ice goes black for them. They can't find anything positive about their game. And they go out there, whether it's a defenseman or a forward or a goalie, and they just hope they don't screw up. And that's a terrible way to go to work, because if you hope you don't screw up, guaranteed you're going to. You have to go and let it fly. But it's hard to have that confidence and just say, to hell with it, I'm going to go and play. And Bernier can't do that right now, and he's got to find that again.
Ray, always good to talk to you. We will catch up next Wednesday. Have a great weekend.
For a request, even though we're on the radio, I'd like you guys to have a couple of popped callers for next weekend or for next Wednesday.
Done. I got a big caller at home.
Still
I haven't brought
him
in a
still
while.
Still got him.
Yeah, Brownlee, that's all his closet has, actually, so that'll be easy.
Robin's going to have to fight through the shirts to find the one he wants.
Exactly. Thanks, Ray. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.
See you, boys. Have a good week.